the grief had been there the whole time. I'd just been kind of holding it back with enough distraction that as soon as I found stillness, I realized I was like, oh, okay, I have work to do.
Welcome to the Happy Engineer Podcast, the place where we help engineers to build your career, balance your life, and be happy. My name is Zach White, a former engineer now turned CEO, lifestyle engineering coach, and your host. I believe that success without fulfillment is failure. Join me each week as we bring you an inspiring leader or message to help you enjoy both. Thanks for investing time with me today. Now let's do this. Your career is painful. I mean, just be honest. At times, we all experience pain at work. A bad annual performance review, pain. A big presentation goes south, pain. Customer cancels a contract because of something you did, pain. Boss puts an unrealistic deadline on your project, and guess who's working the next 6 weekends? Pain. And what about at home? How much pain are you experiencing in your relationships, your marriage, your health, you name it? Why does pain and suffering seem easy, and happiness sometimes seems so elusive? If you know the feeling I'm talking about, you are about to be inspired by the heart-tugging story of my friend and guest today, Lily Rachels. Even after tremendous suffering, she is a self-proclaimed optimist. Lily believes that even in the darkest times, the light can be found. In her own experience of divorce, the loss of loved ones, and a physically damaging accident that led Lily into her own dark time, ultimately led her to her true calling. Lily offers you and me hope and a roadmap for growing through grief. She holds a Master's of Social Work from the University of Tennessee and worked as a therapist, personal trainer, and trauma-sensitive yoga instructor before building her own coaching practice for leaders suffering from grief. And you need to hear this, because one piece of the human experience we all have in common is pain. Before we get into the interview, I want to invite you to join me for free training and bonus content every week in the Happy Engineer community online. I'd love for you to be there this week. So click the link in the show notes and jump into the group. All right, enjoy this powerful conversation. And I've got a few really practical action steps for you in my debrief at the end of the episode that I use with clients. And if you'll do them, I know they will make a difference in your life immediately. Lily, hi, so glad you're here and welcome to the Happy Engineer Podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So I read one sentence that is the reason we're here chatting today. And I want to read it to start our conversation because it was so impactful and it's a foundational piece of who you are and the work that you do as a coach and as a podcast host and all the great work around your life and mindfulness and meditation and coaching. And it's such a powerful statement. Pain has the potential to produce more growth than happiness ever could. And when I saw that on your bio, I was like, oh my goodness, you know, this is the Happy Engineer Podcast. And I love to talk about positive things and happiness and confidence and courage. And I saw that, I was like, wow, pain has the potential to produce more growth than happiness ever could. What I'd love to do, if you're open to it, Lily, is would you take us to the beginning of the story? Like, where did that powerful tenet of who you are begin?
I'll say that first, I feel like, or I felt like in the past, that my life had been marked by a lot of grief. There had been just a lot of things, whether it was childhood into young adulthood, that didn't seem fair or right. But that particular point, I was on top of a mountain in Colorado. I did my first and only 14er with a friend. And at the time, I was going through a separation that later led to a divorce. And I was out of breath, hiking in Colorado, thin air. And I remember we made it to the top of this 14er. And she took a picture of me. And I remember looking around and I was like, this is amazing. Like, I just did this. I just climbed this mountain. I'm really proud of myself. And later I threw the picture on Instagram. And with everything going on, I remember thinking, I'm like, pain has the potential to produce more growth than happiness ever could. And it's like a download. It came to me. And I put that as the caption. And from that moment on, that moment of my life, like what I was going through, it totally changed my perspective. It was no longer this failure. It was this, okay, how am I going to grow through this? How am I going to get on with my life and thrive, not just let this defeat me?
A life marked by grief. When was the earliest point that you remember feeling conscious to that, aware of that? Not sort of in the experience of it, but you actually would have said, my life is full of grief. Was that something you were aware of as a child, or it was later in life? Like, where did that actually become the way you would describe your story?
It's kind of interesting. I would say I was predominantly like a happy person. I'm a strong Enneagram 7. I like to find the fun. But growing up, I had a parent that had a lot of addictions, and the way that manifested in our family sometimes created a very unstable and, for a kid, scary environment. And it was dealing with that. And then as I started to get older, it was deaths of people very close to me. And then in that particular year, when I got divorced, it was losing both my grandparents within a month of each other. And so I would say it started as a child realizing that that security and nurturing I was craving from the parent wasn't there. And it just felt like an emptiness. And I would say it felt unfair at first.
Mm-hmm. What was the time difference, if you can disconnect the story a little bit? So childhood, challenging situation with parents and addiction. And then you mentioned separation, divorce, and grandparents. Tell us a little bit about the timeline of how this played out.
So I would say the first time I became aware of kind of the reality of what I was growing up in was around the age of 9 or 10.
Okay.
And then when I went through a divorce was 2018. So I was 28 years old.
How long were you married before the divorce?
5 years. We got married young.
So Lily, you and I have a really common story around this. I was married right out of college and also married 5 years before my divorce. And for those who know my story, that was a rock bottom moment for me as an adult. And I remember that vividly. So if we take that time of your life, divorce and loss, you said both your grandparents in the same time frame.
Yes.
Like, what was going on for you? What was that like?
At first, it just felt out of control. It felt empty. And I remember being with my dad at lunch and I told him, I was like, I feel like I'm like digressing in life. Like I'm going backwards. And he looked at me, he's like, Lily, life's not linear. It goes up and down. It circles back. It's not this just straight upward curve until you die. And it, that's, yeah, at that time, it just, the amount of turmoil and emptiness I felt. And it was that feeling of you go to bed at night, finally fall asleep, and then you wake up in the morning and like for 2 seconds you kind of forget about your life, and then, you know, reality comes back in. And I just remember it was like pulling the covers back over my head, like I just don't want to get up yet, like I just want a few more seconds of peace before I have to face what I feel like my life is becoming.
What were you actually doing for your vocation at that time?
Yeah. So at that time, I had just finished my master's degree in social work, and I was looking for jobs in the therapy world. And so as I was going through the divorce, I actually took a part-time job as a nanny just to kind of get through the transition before I stepped into my role as a therapist.
Wow. Okay. So I hope this question is well-received, is well-intended, but I've always wondered. Of course, I've had a therapist and worked with therapists, and I have huge respect for the work that social workers and therapists and psychotherapy, that whole domain, so important. But it's often people wonder, what happens when the therapist has challenge and needs therapy. Mm-hmm. Like, so could you describe that dynamic a little bit of you're going through tremendous grief yourself and showing up at work, seeking to counsel and provide therapy to others. Is that as hard as it sounds? What's that? Can you just describe that?
No, that is hard, which is why I took, like I said, kind of a nanny job in between as a buffer there, because it was too much at the time. But I will say it's difficult when you're like in the, you're used to being the one on the other side of the room, right? In the other chair, because it's hard to not try to psychoanalyze yourself. I remember when I was in therapy, the words coming out of my mouth, I'm like in my head, like, well, I know it's probably this, or I know that this has to do with this part of my childhood. And it was hard just to like let go of the need to be the expert in the room and let someone else help you instead of being the helper.
I can relate to that so much. And not just in the context of coaching and therapy, but in engineering as well. Sometimes my own intelligence and what I know, and for those listening, you can't see, I'm doing the air quotes, so like what I know already really blocked me in my career at times from being able to see a situation with a fresh set of eyes or really move through it. It helps to have that third party or that person to ask you questions and point out things that you can't see. And so when in the journey, Lily, did this mountain climbing expedition happen? Was this after those events you just described and the kind of awareness of this idea that pain has so much potential for growth?
I would say it was kind of smack dab in the middle of it. The process of separation divorce for me took about a year, and it was right in the middle. And it was at that point that I really had kind of that, I would say, download realization for myself. I dove into my growth, and like I quit watching TV for a period of time and I only read books. Like that's what I did at night. And I focused on how I wanted to feel and what I wanted. And I just started cutting out the noise. Like I decided, I was like, you know what? I'm not going out. I'm not drinking alcohol. Like I'm just really going to dive into me as a person and just not just up leveling, but like becoming a better person in like areas of my life that, you know, it's with any relationship ending, it's like, there's two people, so there's two problems. Right. And it was like, what can I do so that I don't repeat this again in life?
Wow. So then let's unpack what it means. I mean, I'm so engaged in this sentence because I think it's really powerful, but I want to hear your heart behind it and how this comes to life. So pain has the potential to produce more growth than happiness ever could. We're all, at least the engineering leader listening to this and you and I, like we want growth. We want to grow. And I believe personally that that's an intrinsic desire inside of healthy humans. Like we desire growth. That's innate inside of us. I don't know if you would agree with that statement or not, but that's something I believe. And so it's easy for me to take this and conclude, if I'm being very logical, if the engineer in me comes out, that if what I want is growth, therefore I would rather have pain than happiness because pain produces more growth. But I don't like that idea. That doesn't feel good.
I don't like that idea either.
And so like, help us understand, what does it mean? How does this come to life? And how do we apply this principle into our day-to-day? Just sort of unpack it for us.
Well, first I would say that, no, I don't think we should go out just looking for pain. That's not my philosophy at all. I actually, my natural tendency is to avoid the pain so that I can feel the good feelings. But the part about like when I say like pain produces growth, it's because when we're happy, like when you're happy, you're content. And when you're content, you're not typically trying to change anything. When everything is just going well or good, that's normally when we fall off the wagon with like, are we still reading those books? Are we still leaning into our, maybe our spiritual side? Are we going to the gym and working out? Or are we getting a little bit complacent in that just happiness and the kind of the flat line of life, so to speak? And then when something happens, like maybe it's a death or a loss of some kind, it could be a job loss, it requires us to change in some way. There's a lot of times in life where we don't really have a choice. It's like, I can't really go on the way I was because this thing has ended. So that's why I say pain is the potential to produce growth, because once a painful point happens, we're kind of forced to take action in one way or another. And that's where I really see it as this catalyst to our growth, because when something happens, it's again, when we're happy, it's kind of harder to get us going sometimes to be like, oh yeah, like I should go buy that book and read that and take that course or do that thing. You're like, oh no, I'm happy. I'm good right now in life. But when pain happens, it's like, oh no, what am I going to do? I've got to find something. And so I find that pain pushes us.
Yeah. Would you say from the coaching and the work that you do now and having the therapy background, is this an automatic response to pain? Or is there something that has to be true inside of us to get the growth response from pain rather than spiraling into a depression or a negative state that we don't come out of?
I would say this is not the natural response. Now, maybe someone that has more of a growth mindset, and like you said, they're already like on that growth journey, might see it that way. But I know for myself, it is something I have to choose. So in end of 2020, my mom died very unexpectedly. And last year, I found myself back to my natural tendency, which is to, oh, I want to avoid the pain. I don't want to think about it. I just want to be okay. And it took me several months to get to the point where I was like, oh no, I need to lean into this. I need to feel this and I need to see what I can learn from this. So it's not a natural tendency that we're just, you know, innately born with. Most of the time when something happens, again, we're forced to take action, but a lot of times that action could be like negative coping mechanisms or avoiding what we're having to go through and running away or running towards something that appears to be better.
So I was writing a note, and right in the middle of it, you said something extremely important. You said in 2020, your mom suddenly passed away.
Mm-hmm. She had a brain aneurysm.
And totally unexpected. Like no
very
idea
unexpected.
That, oh, wow. I mean, Lily, I'm so sorry. Just to acknowledge the pain. I feel pain in that moment.
Thank you.
Just hearing that. It's interesting to me that you're an expert in this kind of work and helping other people through grief and pain. And even then, you said months passed before it triggered in you, like, I need to make that new choice. Was there something that happened that pulled you from that place of being in the grief and avoiding pain to the choice that you just mentioned? Is there anything you can think of that led to that, or just time? What would you say?
For me, it was, I think I decided, and I've done this prior in life when I've gone through a loss, I decide that I'm okay before I actually am. It's like, I don't give my heart time to catch up with my head. And so I remember shortly after she passed, I was like, you know what? I understand that this happened. I know the grieving process, which is never a good thing to say. You're like, I know the process. So I think I can think my way out of it. And so for me, I felt in that moment, I remember it's almost like I felt I could outsmart my grief. You know, I was like, I know what's going to happen. I'm going to feel sad and denial and anger and depression. It's like all these things, right? I know what I'm going to feel. So I'll just fast track my way through it. And what that ended up looking like was over the last summer, I love to travel. So I traveled a lot and I thought I was fine because I was away from everything. And even friends of mine would be like, oh, you seem like you're doing so great. And on the inside, I think I knew, like, I'm not okay. Like, I'm really sad. And for me, that point of realization was when I got home at the end of the summer and I was still for the first time. And I wasn't distracting myself with fun or anything, activities, but I was actually just home and I was working. And it was just like, all the weight came back that I'd been running away from. It was like the grief had been there the whole time. I'd just been kind of holding it back a little bit with enough distraction that as soon as I found stillness, I realized I was like, oh, okay, I have work to do.
Lily, you're speaking my language as an engineer, this being in your head, and I know the process. I know the five stages of grief. I know how this plays out and I can intellectualize anything.
Yeah.
Even today as a coach and having done all the work that I've done to build emotional mastery and get into my heart and soul more now than ever before, I still have that default setting of being in my head. And so can you speak to that a little bit? How can we improve in becoming aware that, that's what's happening? You know, here I am stuck in my head and dropping into that heart and soul part of us. What's the way? How do we start to actually be in a different mode?
Our minds like to take over. We like to, and not everyone, but I would say engineers probably fall more into this bucket where it's like that logical thinking process where we're like, okay, I'm going to reason with this. I think of it as getting pulled out of our body. Like our brain is just on like, I'm in charge. We're going to think through our process. We're going to deal with this as we would X, Y, Z. And we get disconnected from our body. So I think one of the best things to do is to get grounded. And I mean like physically back into your body. I'm a big proponent of yoga or even earthing. It's where you like go outside, take your shoes off, put your feet on the planet and breathing and getting back to breath. I don't know if you meditate or anything, but it's finding that stillness so that we can get back into our body and give our heart an opportunity to catch up with our head.
Yeah, this is powerful. And I do have those practices in my life now, but I definitely did not before I became a coach. And when I was an engineering leader, so back up 5 years ago, if you had said all the things you just said, I would have thought to myself, what is this flower child talking about?
Yeah, like, this sounds crazy.
Yeah, your name is Lily for a reason. Okay, so let's go ahead and unpack it a bit, because I can imagine the engineering leader listening to this may be curious, but may not have the level of connection to these ideas that, that you and I have. So let's get specific. Take my situation. I'm going through XYZ, really challenging thing, and I'm in my head, and I could tell. And I become aware of that, and I want to take an action to shift. What's a specific example, maybe the earthing thing you described? Like, walk us through it. What would you do, or how would you coach me to work through that?
Yeah, so if none of those things were in your practice, I would see how that might feel a little woo-woo to some people. So the first thing that I would actually start with is just finding some time alone, getting out a piece of paper, and starting to write down, start with like the facts, what's going on in your life, but then asking yourself, what am I feeling? And just starting there, like just a simple question, like, well, what am I feeling? And if it's like, I feel sad, it's like, why do I feel sad? And then expand, I feel sad because this happened. Well, why? And like to keep digging deeper in the whys. And what you're doing is you're just making yourself kind of explore deeper into your feeling and your emotion instead of just thinking through it. And also getting things on paper can be very cathartic. So I would start there, but the stillness and taking some deep breaths before you do this practice, because it helps us get into our parasympathetic nervous system and helps us drop back down into our body and get out of that fight or flight.
I like the simplicity of that. Any engineer can grab a piece of paper and just start writing about what's going on in our head first, if you need to clear that piece, and then ask the questions, get curious about what's going on in your heart. What are the emotions and the feelings you're experiencing, and digging below the surface? So there you go. If anybody listening needs a place to begin, there's a simple exercise. And there's something about what you described I want to highlight, because I think it's really controversial, especially the way that emotional intelligence is taught. You mentioned about the choice, that you're making a choice. And I've heard you say before, you know, that you choose the way you feel. Would you unpack that? What makes you say that we have a choice over the way that we feel and experience life versus this is happening to me by these external circumstances?
In therapy, we'll talk a lot about an internal or an external locus of control. So I like to think of it as if there's a circle and a marble on the inside. You're the marble, and the circle is everything around you. And an external locus of control would be if everything in that circle got to decide how you felt. So your boss, your wife, your kids are all pushing and pulling your emotions. So if you live with an external locus of control, then it's going to be very true for you that other people have a lot of effect in the world, and everything around you has a lot of effect over how you feel. With an internal locus of control, that's where we take responsibility and ownership of how we feel and decide that it's like, I actually don't have to feel that way. Like my child can throw a tantrum in the grocery store and it doesn't make me angry. Like, anger is the emotion I go with, but I'm the one that has control over that. So it's starting there to be like, okay, so which am I? Am I living in an external locus of control or an internal locus of control? And then once you identify that, if you're living externally, there are things you can do to start to take that power back. And then that's where I would say you get to a point where you can choose your emotion.
I'm going to be the mean devil's advocate for a moment.
Do it.
I agree with what you just said personally, but I also know for myself, and I'm going to take, you know, the situation that you just described it with your mom. And I think my mom's still living, but when I even imagine if my mom passed away today unexpectedly, that external situation's going to make me really sad. Like, and so even though I agree with what you just said, I can think of an example at those extremes where, like, I don't think I would be able to make any other choice than to be extremely sad. So can you maybe tell us about what does that mean? Obviously, we're picking something really extreme, and maybe that's an unfair question, but how would you kind of describe how those two things can both be true, or just maybe rationalize a bit of what's going on there?
When you think about, like, we'll go with that, like, thing, because that hits close to home, right? Like,
Yeah. Yes,
absolutely. And I would say, because it's, you are in control of you, right? You get to decide what Zach does today, tomorrow. Those are your choices. But we give, and power might not be the right word, but we give influence and love to other people. And so in terms of your relationship with your mom, you have a lot of stock in that. That's a special relationship to you. And so you're allowing that person to have influence over your life, so that if you lose your mom, absolutely, it's going to be heart-wrenching. And that's healthy. So when it comes to those things, that's more of a choice, though, still, where it's like, I've allowed this person to stay in my life, have a part of my life, and have an effect over me. Where someone could also argue that if they don't have a great relationship with their mom, they might have decided that, I don't talk to my mom anymore. She's not in my life. It has nothing to do with it. Therefore, if that event happened, I'm shut off from that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So that's actually an interesting distinction. What's the difference between an external locus of control versus a choice that I have made consciously or subconsciously by investing my heart, my energy, my time, my love, my values into a relationship, in this case, my mom? And by doing that, that continual choice to maintain that connection and give her that special place of my heart leads to the fact that, yeah, if I lose her, I will feel incredibly sad and heart-wrenching. But that was still a choice that I made by giving her that special place. And in a way, it's like, it's a risk we all take to love people, is that then if we lose them, it's going to hurt. But it's worth it, because loving them is worth it. How do you distinguish between the choice of giving that love and knowing that there's a risk of pain if something happens, from an external locus of control? How are those different?
Yeah, one thing I would say is it's the self-awareness. It's not only knowing you have a choice, but being more deliberate. It's like when we fall in love with someone, like, you know, some people might just jump into love, fall in love and be like, oh, I don't know what I'm feeling. It feels good. It feels bad. And then other people have a realization that, you know what, I'm investing in this person and trusting them. And I know that they could hurt me because I'm being vulnerable with them, but I'm choosing it. I'm not just like willy-nilly just kind of letting myself go. So it really, I think it comes back to a level of self-awareness about you and your life.
This is really interesting. I did not expect our conversation to go
to
this place, and I'm really intrigued by it. And it unlocks a lot of the different things in terms of what types of choices am I making. And again, I do think some of them are subconscious. Like, we're not aware that we're making that choice. Mm-hmm. It's just a habit. It's a pattern, or it's the way we were taught. And I'm already thinking of different places. Like, wow, I wonder where else I've given away that authority or that power. You know, I think you mentioned earlier, where maybe I didn't want to, and now it's affecting me, and I'm blaming them or the situation instead of realizing, well, that was my choice to give that person or situation authority and control in my life. Interesting, Lily. I like this.
Yeah. And I think it comes back to that. It's like that argument, you know, and someone's like, you made me mad. And they're like, well, I can't make you mad. There are two sides of it where it's like, true, you can't make me mad. You're not physically threatening me harm if I don't choose to be angry at you. But I have given you a certain level of importance in my life. And with that comes like a physiological connection to you in a way where it's like, yeah, like your actions. Like, for instance, like if you say something mean to your wife and she gets upset, that's not on her for like, well, why'd you get upset? It's like you guys have a deep, like both have very important roles in each other's life. And with that is power. Like you're giving away power over it. And with the external locus of control, it's where we're giving away all of our power and we're taking no responsibility for our feelings. Ooh. We're just like, all of our power is dished out. We're not really taking any responsibility for our life. And so we're being pulled around by everything.
Yeah, got it. So then let's talk about how grief becomes growth. Mm-hmm. What is that transformation? If anybody listening to this, maybe they're going through something that's very grieving or painful right now, or they've been there in the past, and maybe there's still an opportunity to grow from it. But as you coach people through this now and what you've experienced in your own life, what is that roadmap or that process? And catch, if I'm getting too like into my head with it, please you know, take us another direction. But what does that look like, Lily? How do we turn grief into growth?
The first step is to actually let ourselves feel it and not try to avoid it or kind of stuff it down. I know a lot of people that we like to suppress our grief and just pretend it didn't happen. But in order to grow from something that's happened in your life, you've got to let those emotions come up and feel them. Like, it's okay that you're feeling angry, that you're feeling sad, that you're confused. And when I coach people, it's through a process of like, let that emotion come and don't try to change it. Just notice it, be aware of it. If you're angry, like, okay, you're angry. Let yourself be angry. Don't try to just be like, I shouldn't be angry. I'm not angry. I loved that person. I'm not angry at them. That's a bad feeling. It's like, no, like first let all of that stuff come up for you. So I would say that's the first journey. I like to think of it as going through grief is it's like climbing a mountain. We could do it where we hold on to everything. So like, I'm feeling angry. That's a rock I'm going to pick up. I'm feeling sad. That's a rock I'm going to pick up. And we keep like trying to hold on to all these things and not feel them. We're going to just put them in our backpack, forget about them, but I still feel it. And as you're walking up a hill, that's going to get really heavy and really tiring. When I say like, feel your emotions, it's almost like, oh, there's that rock of anger. I'm going to sit down here for a second and I'm going to feel it until it goes away. And then I'm going to get up and I'm going to keep moving forward.
I like that picture, climbing the mountain and you trip over the rock of anger instead of picking it up and carrying it in your backpack the rest of the journey. Let's just stop and hold it here until it dissipates and then keep going. That's really good. I'm tempted to pause on this and say like, well, how do we do that? Like, what does that mean? But I mean, that's the engineer in me wanting to get into it. And I think that's a great reason for someone to reach out to you for coaching. If it doesn't make sense how to do that, then contact Lily and get some help. But okay, so if that's step one is allow yourself to feel it. Don't feel like you need to force it or change it. Just be with it. Then where do we go from there? Is that a long process? We're talking years. Is this a single session of coaching? Like, where does it go from there?
So to give you another visual, I think of grief as I like envision my heart, like not my anatomical heart, like the shape of a heart. And it's like water. When something has happened, maybe you've lost someone, it can feel like a raging river coming through you. Those are all the feelings and all the emotions. And when we suppress them and decide not to feel them, it's like we're damming up the stream. And then we start to drown and become overwhelmed by what we're dealing with. But when we break that down and we let it flow, over time, the water recedes and it gets lower. But the thing about loss and sadness, especially when someone dies, I don't believe it ever truly goes away. There's not a point where it's like, okay, 1 year from now, Zach, you're going to feel fine about this. Like, it's not like that. Yeah, no more grief. You're done. You've done your time. You're out of grief jail. No, it's more like a creek. And maybe it's just a trickle of water. And you don't notice it because you're not drowning in it. You're not even really stepping in it every single day of your life. But there's still an underlying sadness that's there because there was a great amount of love that's now lost. And so the sadness is just proof of that love that was there. And that little stream is there. So when people are like, okay, so what's next? Like, how do I get through it? It's like, you get through the white caps of the ocean, like that water, but we're never going to reach this pinnacle of like, I am fine. I feel nothing towards what happened, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
100%. I know in my life story that that is true. And I imagine that engineering leader out there hearing you say it probably is nodding along with us as well. Like, yeah, like, I get it. So feel it. Step one. Where else do you go in terms of coaching people how to turn grief into growth then?
So after we get started with feeling it, which when I work with people, we do a lot, also unpacking your past to kind of see why, say, that particular event is causing you the pain that it's causing you. Because I think a lot of the time it has to do with our childhood and how we grew up and those things. So if I'm working with someone, we do a large piece on unpacking the past to understand our present. So once we do that, I have a lot more information on you. I give them practices to do. One is welcoming prayer, which is, it's essentially a meditation. And if you guys Google that, it'll come up. To where it's kind of what to do when the feelings and emotions arise within us, how to sit with that, how to breathe through it, and just let it be. And cool. Then we really shift to working on mindset. And again, it's back to that choosing the way I want to feel. Like, I'll have people write down, like, what is it you want? Like, we know where you are, we've identified that, but what do you want to feel? And then let's work towards that every day in the form of a gratitude practice is a big thing for me, and writing down small micro goals or little wins. So if someone's very, and I'm giving you a lot, if someone's really deep in grief, maybe they've had a loss, we'll start off making like one micro goal to do each day. And honestly, it might be like, you're going to get up and wash your face. Like, you're going to take care of yourself in some way. And then once you make that a habit, it's like, all right, our next step is to add something else in, and then something else in. And it's just slowly building while you have time to let that river like go down inside of you. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. So feel it. Don't dam up the river. Let it flow. And then begin some disciplines, some practices around how we show up to this, when it shows up to us, mindset, etc. I love it. What else? Are there any other stages or things to consider in really when it becomes something that takes us to the next level in life? Is it just when you do these practices, you know, one day you notice the difference and you're sort of like, wow, I can't believe it. Or what else, Lily, what do we need to be thinking about in that practice?
So absolutely. Like, there's no set amount of time, which makes this work kind of hard, because it's not like 6 weeks will be grief-free. I wish it worked that way, but it doesn't. Like, it's
good marketing at least.
Yeah, I know, you know? Right? 6 weeks and no more pain. You won't miss them anymore. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Not so much.
Yeah, but it doesn't work that way, right? And so because it takes time, I like to build a lot of different, like I said, daily practices into your life. And then also I call it kind of a looking for the good time, which is where we're really going to start calling out when things are like something good does happen. Because what happens to a lot of people, and I dealt with this too, is it's almost this guilt of like, when am I allowed to smile again? When am I allowed to laugh at something again? When is it okay for me to be like, oh, I'm happy, without being like, oh, wait, no, I shouldn't be happy yet. And I know there's a lot of people that struggle with that dichotomy, if it's okay to thrive and grieve at the same time.
Right.
because that can feel messy.
I believe it takes tremendous courage to be happy, truly, authentically happy, because mm-hmm. it's rare in life, I've found, where there's nothing driving grief or sadness or pain into your journey. Mm-hmm. And I think what you just described is so spot on. We are always in tension between how I'm supposed to feel because of what's going on in a particular area and being willing to allow good feelings to come in and choosing them, to your point. I think that's really powerful.
One other thing I'll add, that people are looking for markers, I would say, I believe we are pack animals and we're meant for service. And when we're able to support someone else that has gone through something similar or has having an experience kind of like ours, that is when you will experience that growth too, because it's like you're able to give out of your pain. And I know in my life, it was easier to hold that the grief that I had, because I was able to be like, okay, I can help someone else with this now because I know how bad this hurts. And I do believe that one of the biggest things that can come from growing through your grief is compassion and learning to have more compassion for other people and cultivating that in your life. Because when we know how rocky life can get, it's a lot easier to like show other people grace around us.
Brilliant. I love the upward spiral that when you grow, it gives you more to be able to contribute. We can't give what we don't have. And growth allows us to contribute and give back. And the act of service and giving, I believe, feeds right back into growing. I always find myself, to your point, you know, being in service of someone amplifies my own growth through the journey. So it's like whoosh, and a really good virtuous loop there. I love that. So, Lily, what's making you happy these days?
What's making me happy these days? Well, the world opening back up more has made me pretty happy. Totally. And work has made me really happy lately. And conversations, just connection with new people, like it's my favorite thing. So I would say that the connection with new people has made me really happy lately.
That's really cool. And, you know, I caught myself, it was a poorly worded question in the context of what we just talked about.
I was just going to say, I choose to be happy because of all the connections. People are going to catch them like, this isn't legit.
She doesn't even know. I thought she just said.
He was just made happy.
What a, you know, kind of an important moment there, though. I mean, how that question culturally is phrased, you know, it's a pretty normal way to think about it. But I love that. So Lily, thank you for making those choices to pursue happiness in your life right now. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Let's land where I always land, Lily, and I'm excited to hear your perspective because there's so much power in this conversation. I believe great engineering, just like great coaching, has in common that questions lead and the answers follow. So for the engineering leader who does want to choose happiness and pursue that growth and achievement and success in their life, what question would you lead them with today?
The first question I would have them ask themselves is, what is happy for you? Because it's really hard to achieve something and hit the bullseye if we can't see the target. What is happy? What's your definition of happy? What does that look like? And get pretty granular. Like, again, get that piece of paper and write it down. Like, what does happy look like in your life and in your relationships? And ask yourself that. Start there.
I really like, and it's a good thing we just talked about this, what is happy for you, not what makes you happy. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really powerful distinction, Lily. And for the engineering leader, I know engineers, we really get into the specifics and definitions and nuance. That's a really common thing for engineering leaders. So just highlighting that for anybody who's pursuing this question, notice that distinction and really get curious, what is happy, not what makes you happy. Wow, mm-hmm. That's awesome. Lily, I know people are going to want more from you and maybe they feel like they need some support in an area of grief that they want to transform into growth. So where can that engineering leader listening get in touch with Lily Rachels and the amazing work and coaching you do?
Well, thank you. The best place would be just my website. It's mynamelilyrachels.com.
Brilliant. lilyrachels.com. So we'll make sure there are links to all of the amazing places you can find Lily, including, you know, her social handles and everything on the show notes. You can find those where you always do, the link there in the show notes and the happyengineerpodcast.com. And I really can't speak highly enough about Lily and the work she does. And just in our conversations before we recorded today and watching and seeing the work she's doing in the world, she's a real deal. So if you need help in this area, please reach out to her and get that support in turning grief into growth. And we all go through grief, so we might as well use it as an opportunity to translate that pain into something that makes progress in our lives. Lily, thank you again so much for making time to be with us today. This has been awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
If you're an engineering leader who's ever looked at someone with a bigger job and a bigger paycheck than yours and thought, seriously? If they can do it, I can do it. Let's not name names, but I get it. That's why we created Career Clarity Calls, for one simple reason. A lot of engineers, probably including you, just want a deeper sense of clarity on the barriers holding you back that you need to overcome in order to accelerate your career and achieve your dreams. These short 15-minute calls give you a chance to work with one of our coaches without any commitment or pressure to get out your credit card. Scheduling is easy. Just go to careerclaritycall.com. And a number of people who do these calls ask if they can continue with a deep dive coaching session, which is usually $500. It's 75 minutes and completely life-changing. So I've decided to carve out a number of these calls for free specifically to help our podcast listeners who know you want to reach the next level. Let's jump on the phone and get you the help and clarity you need. Again, that link is in the show notes, or just memorize it. CareerClarityCall.com. Click the big orange button, select a time, and let's build your career. Oh, man. Did that conversation stir your heart a bit? Because it really did for mine. There have been many times in my life that I have not given my heart time to catch up with my head. I think that's a really powerful concept that Lily presented for us in this conversation. Give your heart time to catch up with your head. And I just thought it would be powerful to share with you one example of that in my own journey and how you can begin to practice this as well. The one that came to mind first for me, it's not as heavy and as serious as losing a parent or, you know, the situations that Lily shared in this episode, which were really heart-wrenching. And I can't thank Lily enough for her vulnerability and courage to put that out there with us. And I know everyone has those kind of situations too that you can relate to. But the one that popped in for me first, you know, in the spirit of career was when I actually quit my job at Whirlpool Corporation to launch into Oweco full time. A lot of you may have made a similar leap into entrepreneurship. Maybe it's something you aspire to do down the road. But when I quit my job, I did not take a long vacation or any time to process. I went to my last day at Whirlpool on Friday, and I started hustling on my business on Monday. You know, new job, let's go. You know, I had a plan. I had a lot that I wanted to get done. I definitely didn't want to go a day longer than necessary before I'd replaced my income with the income from my company. And so I got to work. Well, let me tell you, I did not give my heart time to catch up with my head when I made that transition. And whether you've left a W-2 job to start your own business and be an entrepreneur or go into a startup with equity or not, doesn't matter. Even if you've changed jobs or just changed companies, a lot of times we experience the same thing, perhaps on a lesser scale, but perhaps not. Could be the same or even more intense than I felt. Because leaving a company or leaving a job that you've held for a long time, it's still a loss. You know, your mind is still going to process that as loss, and that loss triggers grief and the same kind of experiences that we talked about in this episode. And for me, that was a time where it caught up to me. And I'm not going to share all the stories and the moments where it happened, but just to recognize that was a time of my life where grief was present And there was a lot of emotion that I was not processing because I was so focused on get the work done, hustle, grind, get back at it. And a lot of irony there, considering the message of Oeko and the Happy Engineer podcast is to avoid burnout. You know, and I was really close. Now, I'm happy to say that I had built the systems, the coaching and the accountability, you know, my coach and the accountability of my accountability partners and masterminds to catch me on this before I had any negative consequences. And it created a really powerful opportunity for me to share with my clients that even your coach is at risk of these same things if we don't put the right work in place. But then you have this moment, you become aware, wow, my heart needs some time to catch up. So what do we do? I love what Lily shared about getting into the body when we need to allow our heart time to catch up with our head. So I'd like to share with you a couple of little tips on how to practice feeling your feelings. That may sound like a really weird thing if you've never considered feelings as something that you're in control of. Most people don't see it that way. We were challenged by Lily to see this as something we do have agency and an internal locus of control around. And I'll tell you, I also agree that we have more control than we ever have recognized. While emotions are an outflow, an outpouring, a result of our thinking, conscious and subconscious, I do believe that we can then take control over that because we have control of our thoughts. Now, 95% of our thinking, the horsepower of our mind, is subconscious. And that is why so many of our emotional states feel automatic or seem automatic to us. The feelings that we have seem automatic and out of our control because we're not doing the work to change our subconscious mind. So we need to practice feeling feelings. How do you do it? Here's a few very practical tips for you to practice feeling feelings and allow yourself to process through any negative emotion, grief, or loss that may be with you, but it can apply for any emotion, anything that might be negative or holding you back, something that's causing you to feel discomfort in your life. Try these things. Number one, get alone, get away from every distraction, give yourself time and space. Environment does matter. I would encourage you not to use an environment that is already familiar and associated with things like work, home, home life, kids and family, et cetera. Those main places that you spend time, go somewhere else, somewhere that you can calm and clear your mind. And we're going to start with deep breathing. So get alone, get into an environment that is different and calm and relaxing where you can be present. And start with deep breathing. I recommend breathing slowly in through the nose and exhaling through the mouth like a sigh to begin, and then transitioning after a few deep breaths done that way into an inhale and exhale through the nose with equal counts on the inhale and exhale. So you might do a 4-count in, 4-count out, for example. We're gonna breathe that way for a few minutes. And then I want you to ask yourself, what am I feeling? What am I feeling? Do a scan. Ask yourself the question, what emotions am I noticing? We'll start that question in our mind. What are the words that pop in? What are the thoughts that pop in when I ask the question? Can you be more specific? Can you add more detail to the types of emotional vocabulary that you're using? But also then ask in relationship to your body. What do you actually notice in the sensations or energy, you might hear the word vibration, of your physical body? Where do you feel it? What does it feel like? So, for example, you might sit down, start doing some deep breathing, and then you ask yourself the question, what am I feeling? And the word anger pops into your mind. Anger. Okay, I'm feeling angry. Where in my body do I notice anger? I'm scanning my body head to toe, looking for the energy in motion, emotion of anger. Oh, I feel my throat really tense and tight as I think about that anger. That's where I feel it. What does it feel like? Oh, it feels like there's a chain around my throat and it's tightening. I want you to imagine it. Describe the sensation. Put some picture and color to it as much as you're able to. Get creative. There's no right or wrong answer. There's nobody here judging you for what you're noticing. Let your mind fill in the picture. You know, I like to have my eyes closed and just imagine putting image and texture and dimension, temperature, noise, all these different factors of the sensation of the emotion. This may sound really odd to you, but play with it. Try it. Next point is to stay with it. So once you've noticed it and you've been there for a little bit, hang out there as long as you're able to. Allow that feeling of anger, that emotion of anger, to stay with you. Notice it. Let it be intense. If it needs to grow, let it grow. If it dissipates, let it dissipate. Don't try to change it. Simply be with it. This whole concept may be foreign to you, or maybe it's something that you already do daily as a part of your meditation practice. If that's you, fantastic. If it's not, no problem. We all begin somewhere on the journey of emotional mastery, but practicing feeling your feelings is something that I highly encourage everyone to do, especially if you've been through or are going through something that's really tough and you have this sense that it's weighing you down, that you never let your heart catch up with your head, then I really encourage you to go and practice this as soon as you can. Run the experiment. Do it a few times a week for the next month and run that test and see what you notice. If you will dedicate time and energy to this every day, or even call it 3 times a week for a month, I promise you that you're going to experience a shift in how that emotion is weighing you down. It's going to change your state, your energy. Your thinking will become more clear. And you're going to have more energy to put into the things that you want and move forward faster towards your vision and goals than when you have this emotional baggage weighing you down. Hey, if you have questions about that, I'd love to dig into it with you. Make sure you join our free Facebook group, The Happy Engineer. Shoot me an email if you want, zach@oasisofcourage.com, or go out and check the show notes. We got our bonus content there from this episode. And as always, all the links to everything that went and we talked about with Lily is going to be there. However we can serve you, let us know. But most of all, keep crushing comfort, creating courage, and let's do this. My friend, that's all we've got for this episode of the Happy Engineer Podcast. Thank you again for investing your time with me today. If you're like me, then maybe you'll take some notes and share this episode with your fellow engineers. Why? Because it will help you learn deeper, remember these insights, and take action. So share this episode with 2 or 3 friends just like you who are committed to building their career. Lastly, make sure to link up with us at oasisofcourage.com. Grab our free tools for career growth there in the resource hub, and schedule a free call with our coaching team today. Please just share this podcast with anyone who you think might enjoy it. Until next time, remember to crush comfort, create courage, and let's do this.